And if you look at how fast the world's changing, you know, a lot of what we teach them specifically will be obsolete, you know, by the time they're actually going to use it. But I think what remains is like the principles of like how to learn, how to think critically, how to respond to failure, how to accept failure, you know, how to work as a team, all of those things, which I think they're the real learnings that will be immensely valuable for those, you know, those children as they kind of become young adults and even old adults somewhere down the line.
This is a sentiment that's been shown time and time again by scientists and technologists right around Australia and beyond. It's all about creative thinking and problem solving, and our next guest, Mark Wildman, certainly knows a lot about that. And you know what? He's teaching kids science in a really fun way. We're talking science parties all over the UK.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsom.
Yes, welcome again to another Physics Ed podcast. Hey, big week this week. And in fact, it's quite an interesting week for me because this is a friend of mine, Mark Wildman, who 10 years ago was working at Physics Education. Now, he's gone back to the UK and he's set up this brilliant company called Sublime Science. And this company has inspired more than 1 million children to discover how science really can be very awesome just by doing science parties every single day of the week. And by the way, he does a lot of school programs too. Now, Mark Wildman is actually quite best known for winning the Dragon's Den competition. It's a bit like the Shark Tank that we have here in Australia. He very much is involved and passionate in getting kids to understand how science truly works. And you know what? He's been seriously recognized. Her Majesty the Queen of England, has given him an award for innovation, and he's a TEDx speaker as well. So without further ado, let's listen on to Mark Wildman about what he does at Sublime Science and why he cares so much. Mark, welcome to the Physics Ed Podcast.
Hey, Ben. Great to chat with you.
Absolutely. Now, I just did a bit of a time check here. It's what, 10 to 11 at night. And what time is it where you are?
I can't do enough maths, but that'd be 10 to midday.
Righto. All right, mate. So look, we've got a whole bunch of people that have been on this podcast before, and I really wanted to get you on because you've been heavily involved in the UK and surrounds and really around the world in a lot of ways doing science stuff. So there'll be some people, though, who don't know what you do, man. So Mark, tell us a bit about what you do.
Well, I guess probably best known as that guy that went on to Dragon's Den here in the UK with my company Sublime Science, and fired some smoke rings at the dragons, made some slime, ended up getting some investment. But I guess the real story goes back a long way before that. So at this point, Sublime Science has been going for 9 years, just over 9 years. And we've been making science awesome for kids in at our science parties, in primary schools, at museums. At this point, like you mentioned, all in mainly England, but in a few other countries around the world. And somewhere along the way, as our little strapline is, we've inspired a million kids to discover how awesome science can be.
And that's just why you need to be on this podcast, because you've been doing so much cool stuff. And by the way, there'll be some people that don't know what Dragon's Den is. So in Australia, one that's still rolling here is called Shark Tank. But Dragon's Den has been down here as well. But basically, you got to be in front of people who really know what they're talking about business-wise. But you know, I suppose in a lot of ways, you're just a teacher trying to teach people stuff.
Yeah, a bit of a weird one. Yeah, so Shark Tank in the US as well. That show's kind of made it around the whole planet. But yeah, just a random guy. So a scientist by background, like I have a master's degree in physics. I've been kind of obsessed with science since I was about 8 years old or something. So just a random guy that found science fascinating from a very young age. And I guess as I, you know, kind of became an adult and was trying to figure out what to, you get to that, what are you going to do with your life type stage of things. I figured that making science awesome for primary school kids would be a cool thing to do. Been working on it pretty much every day for like 9 years at this point.
Yeah, so. I mean, flat out. I mean, obviously we'll talk more about what Sublime Science does, but I'm always curious as to what got you into science. Like, I mean, you could have done, you did your Master of Physics and whatnot, but I mean, at some point in your life, you went, no, science is my thing rather than, you know, sport or whatever it is. Like, what made you go, yeah, this is it. I need to be involved in this type of gear.
Yeah, I think as a kid, I had that innate, I think a lot of kids do, just the fascination with why stuff works, I guess. Just probably that annoying kid to the detriment of my parents and whatnot, who would always just kind of ask why about 37 times anytime they tried to tell me anything. Yeah. So had that kind of, I guess, hardwired, as a lot of kids do, which is kind of cool. So had that just from a very young age. And as I got, I guess, as a kid, you don't necessarily really kind of know what science is. It's just almost like, it's almost like a course in how stuff works and why it works, how it does. But as I kind of got a bit older, I was lucky enough, I guess probably in a way what got me into teaching is I was lucky enough to have a few really good teachers, like a couple of really good teachers that really changed the way I thought about stuff. And obviously that made a big impact on my life. And then now I'm kind of in a fortunate position where some of like the ideas and things that I share hopefully can have that kind of impact on, you know, on kind of some more people's lives. And I think that's one of those kind of priceless things. You can't, there's like, it's a certain buzz you get from like really changing the way and helping somebody to think about something slightly differently that you can't really get that buzz anywhere else, I don't think.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm actually like, I'm just thinking, just hearing that like right now, right on our Facebook site, which basically means that by the time this goes out, you know, the whole post is gone. But we thought, hey, mm-hmm. we'd love to just give back to as much as we can, and create like a little teacher pack, which basically said, look, what's been cool and what's been awesome and happening in your school. And this, we've had this flood of awesome stories where parents are describing how their teachers just helping their kids in all sorts of areas. Seriously, like, I mean, it's not meant to be a plug, a shameless plug, but generally, yeah, if you go through the thread of this, like, there's off the top of my head, there's about 60 odd comments, and they're genuinely like paragraphs, heartfelt discussions about this is how teachers change lives. And it just got me thinking, just like you said, yeah, you had several teachers that did this. Like, can you remember like an instance where you go, yeah, I remember this thing. Like, this is like, wow, it still sticks out in your head. Like, why they were that inspiring to you?
Yeah, it's, I guess as you get older, the memories maybe get more blurry.
throwing you on the spot here, mate.
Yeah, not as young as I used to be. I remember actually, like, I guess maybe because it's later, but I remember when I did an A-level in physics. And I guess it's that, it's a weird combination of like having a teacher actually kind of believe in you, but also just challenging you to think differently about things. It's hard to give kind of like a specific example, but it was kind of, I guess it worked, as in the education really worked. So it did, I got to improve, like, as in my level of science improved like very rapidly, and the ability to kind of think critically about things really improved really rapidly. And I think there's something just in all of us, as whether it's you're an educator or just everyone in general, like there's something addictive about that progress, you know? So if you make some really fast progress in just how you think about something or how you understand something, it's very addictive. And I found that process to be very addictive. And then obviously, like I say, getting a little bit older, you get the opportunity to kind of, I guess, pay it back or pay it forward, whichever way you kind of want to look at it. I mean, we've been going for, like I say, about 9 years now. And we just got a Facebook message the other day. It was super cool. And so 9 years ago, I did a science party for a kid. And I just posted something about saying, you know, we've been going for 9 years or whatever at this point. And this mum posts up a picture of me like 9 years ago. And I think I'm getting this right. Her child then was 8. So he's now kind of 17. There's kind of the, yeah, kind of the math on that. Something like that. So he's literally going to do a degree in science. And obviously we're not, like, I'm not in any way claiming that one science party was, you know, the whole reason he went obviously to university, because, you know, we obviously can't, I would never say something like that. I'm sure that dude's done a ton of work to get good results and everything else. But I mean, who knows? But just to see that kind of, you know, that thing, those little decision points of like one teacher believing in you or one teacher challenging you to say, actually, you're doing pretty okay, but you could do really, like, you could be really good at this. Or whether it's in, I guess the example that I put out the other way around is that guy that, you know, shows that kid how to whatever, launch some rockets or whatever we happened to do that random afternoon almost a decade ago. Oh. And that can link on to then someone going to university, someone getting a degree in science. And then he's talking about, you know, like that's a whole, you know, career potentially, you know, which that kind of impact I think is super cool.
No, I love it. And like, we've received these emails as well. And I bet you there'd be listeners walking the dog, driving the car. They go, yep, I know, I've seen, I've run into someone down the shops going, yeah, I remember you back in whatever time it was.
Yeah.
It's exactly what you do. Your impact to your learners. I think there's a saying, and I'm going to get this wrong, I always stuff up quotes, but there's something to the point of saying, you just don't know how a teacher's effect on the universe is almost infinite. You just don't know how long that effect can actually be, because that child, for example, that 17-year-old child, and for all you know, they don't necessarily have to be a Nobel Prize winner, but they're obviously highly engaged in their world, which means they're now going to be highly engaged in their kids and so on and so forth. So that's what's really cool about education. That's the thing that I love and drives us. I mean, unreal. I mean, yeah, and Sublime Science is doing a fantastic job. I mean, geez, 1 million kids. I mean, that ain't a small number.
No, it's one of those pretty silly ones. And if I can just, I guess, even given the ridiculousness of how we started off. So it was we've been going for, like I say, about nine and a bit years. But we started off literally with a loan from the Prince's Trust, which is a charity in England. So it was £1,750 for that loan. That's what the business was started from.
What did you use it with? What did you use it on?
Literally, so unfortunately, I was only, 23 years old, 22 years old, just done my masters and this and that. And then it was literally just buying stuff. So I didn't even, at that time, I didn't even have a car, a phone, a laptop, anywhere to stay. So I moved in with my parents. Literally, that was just spent on, you know, some equipment. And the company only really got started because we got deposits from people that booked our stuff that enabled us to buy all the equipment we needed to do the stuff. So it was kind of that comedy level of, you know, I guess it can all look pretty fancy, you know, 9 years later or whatnot. But at the time it was, you know, it was just me and for a year, it was just me and a few boxes of stuff, just doing fun science experiments and educating people and teaching people like new ways to think about stuff, new ways to think about science. And yeah, that was literally just about it back then.
And roll that forward. I mean, you're able to pay that forward a long way. I mean, I love the fact that you've been, one of the things that you've been involved in is in East Africa, doing some stuff in playgrounds. I mean, I'd love to know a bit more about that. I mean, tell us a bit more.
Yeah, no, well, cheers. Well, I've tried to, pay it back or pay it forward, whichever way you want to think about it. But one way is, so the Prince's Trust was like the charity that loaned us that money. And I actually do speak for them and help out some young people. So they generally help people that are kind of maybe 18 to 25, somewhere in that ballpark, a little bit younger than me. Young people just wanting to get started with projects, whether it's music education or whatever. Just basically, I'll try and help anyone that's just passionate about doing anything, really. If it sounds like something worthwhile, I'll try and help out. So I kind of speak for them and help out a few young people in that case. And over in East Africa, I'm on the board of trustees of a charity called East African Playgrounds, who build playgrounds all around East Africa, which I guess is my link to the area. But then I've published a bunch of content, which is, there's a bunch of science experiments that you can do, like, you know, without electricity, without any fancy equipment at all. You know, I'm talking kind of eggs and toilet rolls and, you know, anything you can get your hands on, really. And we've just been giving away, like, books and you know, learning, online learning platforms and stuff to people around East Africa for a while now. And I know for a fact, because they've emailed in and sent us really cool photos, that like they've been used on like the mountainsides of Africa. They've been used in like a refugee camp, which I just think is really cool to just, you know, just play that tiny part in. There's all these kids in the refugee camp, just to know like a couple of them have done some science experiments because of some stuff you put out there, I think is a super cool thing.
So that's what I love about the thread of what you're doing, because, yeah, I mean, a lot of what your work is, you know, people would just see it's science parties, but it goes way deeper than that. I mean, it's really just engaging kids in science in a platform that they love, that they love to do. They want to do experiments, whatnot. They don't want to do tests. They just want to play with stuff, which is very, very, very true. I mean, but then again, I mean, at the same point, I mean, I know that you've had to do some quite formal presentations, and one of which was TEDx. Like how what was that like being involved in that?
Yeah, pretty scary, to be honest. It's a weird thing. I think a lot of us are this way. Probably a lot of people that kind of go on stage and do stuff like that are actually kind of closet introverts. So
True.
I'm one of those people. So having, you know, been on TV in front of millions or whatever, been on a stage in front of this many thousand people or whatnot, I also like, I'm like, you know, I was a super shy kid who was too scared to talk to anyone. And so it's been a bit of a journey going from, you know, almost being, you know, I remember, I think I cried at primary school when I had to do like a talk to 20 kids, you know, when I was a kid. So going from that to walking out on stage in front of like 1,000 people and something is kind of a bit of a trip. But I guess the thing that makes me do it isn't some kind of like, you know, whatever, love for stress and pain. It's more like if someone's put together a platform and a place to share, you know, share some ideas that could really help somebody out, I think it's almost like you've always got a sense of duty to give that a shot, you know, to kind of, it'd be selfish of me to say, I'm kind of, you know, I'm a little bit nervous to walk out in front of 1,000 people in like a real formal businessy kind of, you know, I guess entrepreneurial change maker setting. And I'm a bit nervous to walk out there. So I could just have not bothered. But then that's kind of, you know, that's almost like putting myself above the cause, really. Like if I'm, you know, I'm choosing, I'm the type of person that wouldn't want to like, I'll choose 15 minutes or whatever it is of a little bit of discomfort, a little bit of nerves and all of that. But on the upside, maybe, you know, that goes online, you know, maybe that shit gets seen, you know, so 50,000 people, 100,000 people, whatever. And maybe it makes a real impact in someone's life. So if you've got that opportunity, for me, it's like you've got to kind of suck it up a little bit when I get a bit nervous and a bit scared to walk out there.
Absolutely. And like when you watch a lot of the TED, the, you know, recordings, it doesn't have to be always spectacularly groundbreaking. It just needs to be a little bit innovative, a little bit of fun. I mean, I wish I could remember the guy's name. I hate it when you forget names, but remember watching one where this bloke in India where he was just showing you how on stage, how to teach science using trash, basically just bits and pieces you'd found around, you know, obviously making sure it's sanitary and whatnot, but using stuff that you could scavenge around the place and getting kids into the maker movement using simple stuff. I mean, that's what the TED stuff is all about, and it's unreal. And so actually, I was actually surprised, like you'd think that a platform like that is extremely well known and it is amongst most people, but it doesn't necessarily always be the case. So if there are listeners who have not heard of TED, they'll be very, I would love to know if you haven't, you know, drop us a line, type in TED Talk and see what's out there. I mean, there's so much stuff. It just blows your mind about just what is going on in the world. And that's what's great about that platform. Just out of interest. So obviously you've got a lot of stuff coming up with, you know, how Sublime Science is growing and all the rest, but I mean, the core thread is science experiments. So I'm just going to have to ask, what is your favorite experiment to actually do in front of kids? Like, this is going to be kind of a tough ask. Like, what's your favorite?
Yeah, that is putting me on the spot slightly. I guess being a sort of I consider myself almost like a larger child myself at this point in my life. I think it's pretty similar to how kids think about it. So I really like anything, skirting around it a little bit, I like kind of any form of slime, anything that bubbles, anything that explodes, stuff like that, which I think maybe I'm just hardwired to think those things are pretty cool.
Fair enough. Have you ever had a time where you're running this, and I've asked this of a number of guests, people have listened to this before, know I often ask this, but it really, I'm always curious that a lot of our best learnings are from failure. I mean, I mean, failing is actually useful. In fact, one of the guys, way back in episode one, Adam Selinger talked about he deliberately sets his lessons up to fail and gets the kids to work out where the fail point was. I mean, at the same point, sometimes you might have a lesson where it's basically you weren't expecting to fail. Like, when have you had a situation where the experiment's just gone completely pear-shaped?
Yeah, I think I agree 100%. I think in the UK, we don't always do the greatest of job. I think sometimes we take failure to heart a lot more here than perhaps some of the kind of more American attitude to fail, I think, which is, my TED Talk was actually called Testing Beats Talent, and was really kind of all about how I kind of try and do this myself, but I'd obviously also bring that to the kids as well, really, that you've not really got kind of success and failure, you've just got tests. And in life, like, tests just have outcomes. So obviously sometimes it's the positive outcome that you want, and sometimes it's a negative outcome that is, you know, obviously can be quite devastating. But we can all, like, I do this so often to myself, you can put so much stock in that outcome. And in reality, it's like, you know, you did a test, it has an outcome. You got to kind of just like accept that for what it is, learn the lesson from it, move on and test again, you know, rather than getting so hung up on, it didn't come out how I wanted it to, which unfortunately I think for all of us is, you know, obviously most of the time you try stuff out and it doesn't go exactly how you had it in your own mind. But if there's some good learning there, if people can learn from that experience, I think in a lot of ways it's kind of cheesy, but the kids and as an adult, you can get so much more out of something that doesn't go quite to plan than you can it going perfectly.
Absolutely. I mean, basically scientific method works, funnily. It seems to do that quite well.
Yeah. I think it's had some pretty, yeah, the scientific method has achieved some pretty cool outcomes, you know, like,
yeah, we must try it sometime.
And whatnot, so.
You must try it.
But yeah, it's pretty a lot of evidence to support the fact that it works pretty effectively.
Yeah, true. But let's admit, though, I mean, we are often emotional creatures, and keeping those under wraps is, you know, also part of the challenge. And hey, that's part of growing up too. So perhaps looking back on me in the mirror, perhaps I've got a bit more growing up to do, but that's very much the case. Yeah. But anyway, like, so yeah, so I mean, obviously you're doing a phenomenal job in the UK, and just sort of begs the question, I mean, so where can you see Sublime Science? I mean, obviously you're doing science parties, but not just science parties. I mean, where can you see it growing to and doing as you move along?
Yes, we, it's just, yeah, the kind of, I guess the catch-all thing is just making science awesome for kids, right? So it's not, science parties are a really big part of what we do. We also work with primary schools doing like science shows and workshops and stuff like that. We work with a bunch of different museums and organizations around the UK. There's a couple of books. There's a bunch of online content. There's an online learning platform. And we've just taken our first few trips internationally. So we've gone to... where have we gone to, like Malaysia and Dubai and Spain. So we've gone to a few different places to try and, you know, make science awesome for some kids in some other countries as well. I think really, I mean, it's kind of all the same in terms of the way we do it's different, and the way we structure the programs and make it all work mechanically are quite different. But the fundamental idea is always the same in terms of, it's just about making it, you know, I think with kids, you have to make it a really fun, engaging experience. And if you can do that and at the same time teach them the most important skill, which I might run the risk of going on a bit of a rant about this one, but I honestly believe as any educator, like the most important thing to teach is always how to think critically, because problem solving and critical thinking and then things like the scientific method, they're like principles, not kind of tactics and strategies. And I think rather not just tactics and short-term things. So if you teach somebody, you know, a very specific thing, you know, that might be, you know, you teach someone how to code in this specific language. That's cool and, you know, can be a great way to teach skills. But the fundamental thing you need to be teaching, well, we all need to be teaching, you know, kids, particularly at primary level, is how to problem solve and how to think critically. Because, you know, if we're helping a kid today and, you know, let's say he's 8 years old and we're helping him out, that's cool. But statistically, that child will start working maybe when they're, you know, 22, something like that. They might go to uni, they might do a degree, they might do a master's, who knows, but they might not really start their career for another 14 years. And if you look at how fast the world's changing, you know, a lot of what we teach them specifically will be obsolete, you know, by the time they're actually going to use it. But I think what remains is like the principles of like how to learn, how to think critically, how to respond to failure, how to accept failure, you know, how to work as a team, all of those things, which I think they're the real learnings that will be immensely valuable for those, you know, those children as they kind of become young adults and even old adults somewhere down the line.
Yeah, well, what I was just thinking whilst listening to that is almost a reflection onto the way we've been operating. So, like, just like yourselves, we run, you know, quite a lot of science parties as well, and we've had the occasional question come up saying, look, it's really just a bunch of gimmicks and faddy experiments, isn't it? Like, it's almost like sort of without realizing that we're actually sending out, you know, qualified teachers. Have you ever had that situation where people just don't quite get that the basis of what you're doing is just the same as what you do in a classroom?
Yeah, I think that can be the case. I think fundamentally, like, I think the way we're all learning is changing. And I think that's, you know, that's probably a good thing. Like, obviously, the people that are on here are kind of by definition listening to a podcast. And obviously, when I was growing up, you know, there wasn't the internet and there wasn't podcasts. So I think the way, certainly things that I've learned, you know, in more recent years have been a lot through, you know, podcasts and meeting people, networking, whatever it might be, learning in different ways as an adult. And I think learning in different ways as a kid. So I think, I think if you can create, create a really, at a party, there are limitations, right? You can't, if it's a science party you're doing, you can't make it too heavy duty education, because you've got to have a big focus on fun. The kids need to have a really fun time at a kids party. I mean, that they just have to. But I just know for a fact, I mean, you know, we've done, you know, thousands and tens of thousands of parties. You can make it really, really fun. You can make it engaging. The kids can have an awesome time. But they can also leave, like, one, saying they want to be scientists. So with that perspective, little shift towards, like, thinking of science in a better way and having a more positive opinion on science. But even second, on top of that as well, they can also leave with a real understanding of, like, how to think, like, the critical, like you say, the scientific method of kind of, like, you know, prediction, experiments, conclusion, then run that into the next experiment. What can we learn from it? And I think sometimes, you know, if you are an educator, you might have obviously quite a high education level, quite a technical background, you know, master's degrees, PhDs, all of that awesome stuff. But I think on some level, science kind of is as simple as, you know, keeping it to the basics of just trying to think critically, trying to experiment, trying to see what we can learn from it, and enjoy that process. You can definitely 100% do that at parties. And I think the long-term effect of doing that can be really quite substantial.
One of my high school teachers once said to me, science is simply structured play.
I like that. That's very cool.
And it's really quite profound, because when you talk with some of the greatest minds around, and I've been lucky enough in my position to speak with some of these people, they're highly creative, and they just put points together that some people just don't see. And it's the reality, they're just playing in an intellectual fashion. And that's, I tend to agree with that. I mean, a science party just happens to be another forum for investigation, and hey, let's have a bit of fun with it at the same time.
Yeah, and it also does a really good job of breaking down that barrier of, like, you know, science is just, you know, it's just people doing science in a lab, right? Which is, obviously, there is plenty of that. There's plenty of people at universities and in private labs, you know, doing science experiments and researching things. And that's all, like, amazing and incredible, really, that people are doing that. But that's a very small percentage of the amount of people that really are going to be wanting to apply critical thinking in the scientific method to whatever they want to do. I think a lot of science is just the ability to solve problems. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending how you look at it, like, we've all got, you know, problems in life and in jobs and in careers and business or whatever you might be doing. There's always going to be problems and challenges. And if science, to me, it's really about equipping people with the tools and strategies and methodologies so they can more effectively solve problems and ultimately, like, have a better life, if that makes sense.
Absolutely makes sense. And with that in mind, I mean, I know there'll be some people sort of wondering on how on earth do you get to do this type of stuff? So I'm just sort of wondering, like, if you ever had to get some advice, I don't know, whether they're undergraduates in science communication or the science teachers or primary teachers about to get going, or, hey, even a party presenter or whatever, what would be some advice that you give to them to say, look, I don't know, if they're about to go hit the world and start spreading their knowledge, I mean, what would be some advice that you give these people before they went on their merry way?
Cool. That is a good one. Advice is always a tricky one. I think the main thing, this might run the risk of sounding like not that dramatic.
That's okay.
But kind of just to put one foot in front of the other, as simple as it sounds. So I think sometimes, like, I mean, I you know, we all do this to some level. You see, like, an athlete or an entrepreneur or an educator or a, you know, whoever it is, or, you know, a great artist or a musician or whatever it might be that really inspires you, and you think, God, that's incredible how good they are at that, or what a cool job they're doing, and this and that. And I think that can be super inspiring, but it can also be almost not inspiring, and it can seem a little bit overwhelming, almost like there's no way I'm going to get from where I am now all the way to there. And obviously that might be true or it might not, but I think just to kind of keep in mind that everyone gets everywhere by just like kind of baby steps, you know, just putting one foot in front of the other, looking at the situation you're in, whenever you're in it, trying to make the best assessment, you know, based on the tools, tactics and resources, everything you have at your disposal, like what's the best thing to do now, just doing that, and then just kind of repeating that process of maybe like not putting as much stock into the future and where you're going to end up as a lot of people tend to do.
So I believe that might be about testing talent, Mark,
perhaps. We'll plug that.
Yeah, why not? I mean, obviously, we'll put links in the show notes about that TED Talk as well, because I very much like that idea of slowly, slowly, surely, surely you will get there. Don't be in a hurry. Just take your time and think as you go along. It makes a lot of sense. Hey, look, there's going to be some people who are going to want to get in touch with you, no doubt. So, Mark, how do they do that?
Probably the easiest way is just through our website. So sublimescience.com is probably the easiest one. That's the kind of main home we're at, I guess, online. We're Sublime Science on everything, so Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc. Obviously, a bunch of listeners are educators and things like that. So if they can happily download my first book for free as a PDF, which is called Don't Eat Your Slime. It's just a bunch of fun experiments you can do with stuff you've already got. That's free as well. If you just Google something like Don't Eat Your Slime or Sublime Science, Don't Eat Your Slime or Sublime Science book, something like that, that'll pop right up in your favorite search engine. And yeah, hopefully we can help out.
Yes, and I think Don't Eat Your Slime are probably great words to live by as we close this podcast out. But very true. Unless your slime is made out of edible stuff. But yes, that's as a rule, don't eat your slime. That's probably a good idea.
Even if it's edible, it's very unlikely to taste particularly good, I think.
yeah. Just eat the food that you're meant to eat, and then everyone's happy. Look, thanks very much, Mark, for popping on. I know you've got a lot of stuff going on. And look, much appreciated. And we might catch you another time.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech and more. To see 100 fun free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S. And click 100 free experiments.
Well, there you go. That was Mark Wildman from Sublime Science. And I tell you what, they are doing a fantastic job right through the UK and beyond. They're reaching 37 countries with their e-learning platform, and they're very much about getting kids into critical thinking. You can really hear it. I love the idea of him just saying, here's a step-by-step approach to really solving your life's challenges. The idea of going, yeah, it's just really a series of questions. Did it work? Did it not work? Why not apply some scientific method to your own life and to your own goals? And that's a really good thing to be threading in. And the fact that putting that is into a science party, that is just unreal too. And hey, speaking of critical thinking, the team at Physics Education have come up with a new podcast. It's called Physics Twist, and it's all about what's been happening in science and technology right around the world and what's been recent and what's been really floating our boat. Hey, check it out.
Hi guys. Looking for more science with an Australian twist? Well, you're in luck, because here at Physics we're launching a fresh take on science in the upcoming podcast, Physics Twist. Get up to speed on the latest science and tech news, where we look at what these discoveries might mean for all of us. Powered by the Physics Education team, Physics Twist highlights the most interesting, and sometimes the funniest side of what's happening in our world. We're kicking off in a few weeks, so stay tuned. See you then.
Yes, the Physics Quiz podcast is going to be a lot of fun. I know Duncan, Danny and Holly have been having a blast putting it together, and it's all really about making science accessible. And speaking of making things accessible, next week's episode is very much about that. We're speaking with Sean Keyes, who set up ScienceAbility, which is all about people with disabilities engaging with the community doing science experiments. It's a whole lot of fun, and Sean is very, very passionate and an inspired speaker, I can tell you that. But until then, I hope you're making your science lessons awesome, fun, and accessible, and incorporating a bit of critical thinking, just like Mark Wildman was saying. Hey, you've been listening to me, Ben Newsom from Physics Education, and this is a PhysEd podcast. I'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to another PhysEd podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book, and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.